we have the capacity and the ability to do in California what's never been done in any other state, to stop them in their tracks, to draw a line in the sand and say, you're not going to do this anymore.
Your job is to give the fair-minded middle, the reachable but not yet reached people in your state, your community, whatever circle you can reach, the two things they need to move to fairness. And those two things, quite simply, are information and time.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Cameroon tabloid outing lists create outrage, China makes history with its first gay study, and U.S. strategists pop the marriage equality question. Those stories and more this week because you discovered This Way Out.
I'm John Beaupre.
And I'm Sherry Lund.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending February the 11th, 2006. With headlines like, The Queers Are Among Us, tabloid newspapers in Cameroon have published lists of more than 50 of the country's well-known entertainers, government officials, and sports personalities, claiming each is gay or lesbian. La Meteo first ran a three-page feature on alleged homosexuals and their activities. Nouvelle Afrique and L'Anecdote soon followed with similar, though slightly different, lists. The papers sold out so quickly that newsstands began selling photocopies. L'Anecdote editor François Bicoro told reporters that his paper circulation more than quadrupled. Publisher Jean-Pierre Amagou-Belinga defended the report, saying that men making love to other men may be normal in the West, but in Africa and Cameroon in particular, it is unthinkable. We had to ring the alarm bell. The tabloid frenzy followed a virulent anti-gay Christmas Day homily delivered by the Roman Catholic Archbishop of Yaoundé, Victor Tonye Bako, who condemned same-gender marriage and adoption by gay and lesbian couples and denounced the European Union for giving legitimacy to homosexual acts. The tabloid reports, which name, among others, a well-known tennis star turned singer, two other popular Cameroon musical performers, and two cabinet ministers, have angered queer rights activists in and outside of Cameroon while sparking gossip all across the West African nation. Well-known British activist Peter Tatchell called the unfolding events just the latest homophobic outrage in Cameroon, charging that at least 11 gay men have been imprisoned without trial for several months following police raids on gay venues in the capital city of Yaoundé. Peter Nkemayang, member of Cameroon's National Communications Council, this week said his group has simply advised those whose names appeared in the publications to seek legal redress if they consider them very offending. He said that the reporters have told him they have a basketful of documents to back up their stories in court.
The fallout continues in the U.S. over the Bush administration's late January vote at the United Nations Economic and Social Council to deny hearing applications for consultative status by the International Lesbian and Gay Association, or ILGA, and a Danish queer advocacy group. Nearly 3,000 non-governmental organizations have such status, which enables them to distribute documents and speak at meetings of some UN bodies and conferences. Spokespeople for the State Department defended the vote, a reversal of the U.S. position 4 years ago when ILGA last applied. They cited pedophilia and ILGA's alleged ties with the North American Man-Boy Love Association, even though that group was kicked out of ILGA several years ago. The U.S. supported ILGA's application when opponents used those same charges to deny consultative status to ILGA in 2002. 45 Congress members, 44 Democrats and one independent, signed a letter to Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice this week calling the January vote a drastic reversal of policy and demanding that she repudiate it. By siding with Iran's motion to deny a hearing of the queer group's consultative status application, the lawmakers wrote, "The United States joined some of the world's most oppressive regimes, among them China, Cuba, Sudan, and Zimbabwe, and demonstrated a reprehensible inconsistency in the protection of rights based on sexual orientation." A group of queer Iranian web bloggers, including officers of the Persian Gay and Lesbian Organization, has also written to Rice. They ask if the U.S. representative voting with Iran thought about the consequences of such policy on millions of youth, including GLBT youth in Iran, that are yearning for freedom. How do you expect them to believe that the USA sincerely wants to spread democracy and human rights in the Middle East and support reform in Iran? The letter also noted that Iranian youth were among very few in the Middle East to hold candlelight marches demonstrating support for the U.S. following the 9/11 attacks, and called the Bush administration vote like a slap in our face.
The obnoxiously anti-queer Fred Phelps and his small congregation from the otherwise insignificant Westboro Baptist Church got the press coverage they glory in again this week. The Kansas Klan turned up at the funeral for civil rights icon Coretta Scott King, who suffered a stroke in August and died last week at a Baja California holistic health center. The picketers called her a fag enabler, shouting that her advocacy on behalf of GLBT equality meant she was doomed to hell. As shocked mourners passed them, members of the Atlanta-based transgender group Feminine Outlaws joined counter-protesters yelling, "Take your hate back to Kansas." The church is notorious for picketing at funerals of people who have died from AIDS and Gay Bash college student Matthew Shepard. They've lately been showing up at funerals for U.S. soldiers killed in Iraq because, according to Phelps' daughter Shirley Phelps Roper, they were fighting for a country that harbors homosexuals and adulterers. At least 8 states have passed or are considering legislation to ban demonstrations within 500 feet of funerals, specifically because of the Westboro Church's actions. Speeches at the lengthy funeral for Mrs. King by President George W. Bush and his father, and by former Presidents Bill Clinton and Jimmy Carter, were filled with praise for the woman who championed human rights for all. Dr. Joseph Lowry, who with Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr., founded the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, was the first to mention her support for gays and lesbians, reminding the audience that she frowned on homophobia. Poet and friend Dr. Maya Angelou underscored that point when she said Coretta Scott King cared for gay and straight people alike.
Lesbians and gay men who've wanted to visit the great resorts of the Caribbean as part of all queer cruises have received less than welcoming receptions in recent years, but the tide seems to be turning. In a notorious 1998 incident, a Cayman Islands official named Thomas Jefferson, then tourism minister of the tiny British protectorate, turned away an all-gay cruise from docking in the capital, Georgetown. That decision provoked a storm of international protest and led to diplomatic pressure on the Caymans by the British government. In 2000, the British Privy Council, which has authority over the Caymans, repealed the sodomy laws in all UK overseas territories. Nevertheless, a cruise by GLBT families led by entertainer-activist Rosie O'Donnell in 2004 to the Bahamas caused a major uproar there. But a visit to the Caymans by California-based Atlantis Tours this week brought the first of almost 13,000 queer tourists to the sunny island northwest of Jamaica without major incident. The Caymans' current tourism minister, Charles Clifford, had issued a plea to Atlantis Tours urging the passengers on the all-gay cruise to behave appropriately. And while some diehards continue to protest gay tourists strolling down their streets, by most accounts, both local merchants and their new queer customers thoroughly enjoyed themselves.
After years of denying the existence of queer culture, China has, for the first time in history, conducted an assessment of its estimated 5 to 10 million gay men. The study, entitled Chinese Men Who Have Sex with Men, Survey on Sex and the State of Self-Identity, was supported by the Ford Foundation in the United States and published by the Beijing Gender Consultation Center. It not only presents the first comprehensive and in-depth view of the behavior and current status of China's gay men, but also reveals their mostly hidden social existence, which is little known to the general public. The survey was compiled by noted Chinese scholar Tang Ge, who studied in-depth the personal experiences of 400 gay couples. There was no assessment of the status of lesbians or other sexual minorities. In 2003, the government conducted an AIDS survey on 6 population groups across the country, including drug users, prostitutes, gay men, venereal disease patients, paid blood donors, and anonymous people under examination in hospitals. While that survey uncovered some AIDS infection patterns, it revealed little about LGBT communities, and this current survey is seen as a modest first step in understanding the lives of gay men in the world's most populous country.
However, China has banned screenings of the multi-award-winning movie Brokeback Mountain. According to a Xinhua news agency report late last month, the movie's sensitive topic of gay love makes it too controversial for theatrical release in that country. And this week, the government of the United Arab Emirates did the same, saying it needed to protect its citizens from offensive, abnormal behaviors.
And finally, a survey of another sort released this week in Australia shows that a majority of its citizens support rights for gay and lesbian couples. When asked the question, do you personally agree or disagree that the federal government should introduce a new law which formally recognizes same-sex relationships in Australia? 52% of the 1,200 respondents agreed, 37% say they did not, and 11% said they didn't know. According to David Scammell of the Secular Party of Australia, which commissioned the study, it is unjust, unfair, and out of touch with Australian society for the government to continue to deny gays and lesbians basic recognition in areas like taxation, superannuation, and social security. The gay and lesbian rights lobby said it will be meeting with government leaders in the coming week to discuss federal recognition of same-gender relationships, although Prime Minister John Howard has repeatedly expressed his opposition to granting any legal recognition to gay and lesbian couples. But hot on the heels of Valentine's Day and in support of recognition for same-gender relationships, queer leaders and their supporters have announced that on February the 19th at Victoria Park in Sydney, they'll be conducting a Mardi Gras Fair Day mass planting of 10,000 pink hearts.
That's News Wrap for the week ending February 11, 2006. Written this week by John Beaupre and Greg Gordon and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles.
Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community. For This Way Out, I'm John Beaupre.
And I'm Sherry Lunn.
How the world can change. It can change like that. Due to one little word. Mary.
Leading advocates for marriage equality from both coasts of the United States came together at the recent annual Out and Equal Workplace Summit in Denver, Colorado, to analyze the queer movement's successes and failures thus far and offer a hopeful future. With offices in New York City and Washington, D.C., Freedom to Marry's Evan Wolfson talked about what needs to happen to secure U.S. marriage rights for queer couples. But first, Kate Kendall of the San Francisco-based National Center for Lesbian Rights began the discussion by pointing to successes, both personal and in Massachusetts and California.
I've been in San Francisco for about 12 years, started as legal director at NCLR and then became executive director about 9 years ago. But what's much more important than that is that I grew up in Utah. And so, yes, feel sorry for me, thank you. And so, good Mormon girl gone bad is all you need to know. But what's important about that background is that I think, you know, that, and Evan has sort of a similar story, and I think every one of us in this room, is that, you know, we didn't like sort of come out of the womb as queer activists. That we all have a journey that is very much impacted by the culture in which we live. And in my case, you know, a particularly oppressive culture for LGBT folks. And it is through the lens of understanding how I grew up that I am astonished and amazed and overwhelmed at where we are now in terms of the LGBT movement. Make no mistake about it. Now, I know that there are national and international disasters and a lot of bad news that is happening that is very rightly commanding our attention and our involvement and our initiative to try and make change. But the fact is, even in the midst of that, we have seen unprecedented qualitative change in the attitudes of our fellow folks in this country about how they feel about LGBT folks at a pace that I never, even being my most optimistic, and I am always accused of being overly optimistic, even at my most optimistic, could not have anticipated. So, you know, we all understand Hawaii and the mid-90s. We know what happened with California and the marriage licenses there. And I think people, you know, seeing this picture of Del Martin and Phyllis Lyon getting married in City Hall in San Francisco and probably greeting this picture with a mixture of elation and fear. We couldn't believe it was actually happening and immediately followed on that thought with, oh my God, what are the bad people going to do in light of this? And what is this going to mean for our struggle for full equality for LGBT folks in this country? And I think to some degree, we have, in a very short time, a fairly significant answer to that question. And that is that picture and the 4,000 other couples who got married and the work that Evan's been doing for a decade and the work that NCLR has been doing in other organizations and what you've been doing in all of your organizations has completely changed the landscape. Something happened that was completely unprecedented that we did not think would happen even 5 years ago. Couples began legally marrying in the state of Massachusetts. And so when you look at that landscape, it is impossible to not imagine what further gains can be made with a greater level of engagement and a greater level of commitment on behalf of all of us. Now, I know that in the midst of all of this, there have been some significant setbacks. 13 states passing constitutional amendments to forbid recognition of marriage for lesbian and gay couples. There is a strategy for going back to those states and winning some protections and litigating further in other states. There are still active cases in California, in New Jersey, in Florida, to continue to press this issue. We understand there have been setbacks. There is a strategy for moving back to those states. And in the midst of a dialogue that's already happened in those states around lesbian and gay couples marrying, secure some protections for couples in those states. For those of you who are from California, and I'm very aware of this now being in California, we know that next June, perhaps, very likely, and if not June, certainly in November, we will be facing a constitutional amendment of our own that would prohibit recognition of marriage for lesbian and gay couples, but would also roll back the very muscular domestic partner protections that we've secured in California. But I can say truly, with all confidence, based on the work that's already been done in the state and the campaign that's been formed to counter these amendments, that we have the capacity and the ability to do in California what's never been done in any other state, to stop them in their tracks, to draw a line in the sand and say, you're not going to do this anymore. California did it in 1978 with the Briggs Initiative, which was targeting lesbian and gay individuals teaching in schools. There was a whole strategy on the part of the right to promote these same amendments in state after state. They lost California, and they never tried it again. We know if they lose in California with this effort, we will turn back this tide of ravaging of our families and our relationships that we've seen in so many other states. And we believe we can do it not only because of the groundwork that's already been made, because of the gains that have already happened in California and the dialogue and the discourse that has changed people's minds, but the poll numbers show it. I was shocked, not completely shocked, but pleasantly surprised to see the recent poll on the issue of marriage, not on the issue of civil unions or domestic partnership, but on the issue of marriage in California. Likely voters, these are people who are going to go to the polls, equally split, 46-46, in favor of the right of lesbian and gay people to marry. We have covered enormous ground. So the final thing that I want to say, and then turn it over to my esteemed colleague on whose shoulders, really, we all stand in so much of the work that has been done when it comes to liberty and justice for our families and our relationships, is that we got this far by lots of people putting forward tremendous effort and making historic collaborations. But certainly you know folks who throughout this entire fight to date have been sitting on the sidelines. They haven't had difficult conversations with their family. They haven't been out at their workplace. They haven't talked to their coworkers. They haven't written a check to organizations who do this work, even though they have the capacity to do it. They have not given up one iota of their privilege in order to move this issue forward. So the challenge that I want to put out to each of you is to continue doing whatever activism you've been doing and to talk to those folks who you know have been taking a pass so far and require them, challenge them to make the same kind of commitment you've been making, to sacrifice some of their privilege to have difficult conversations in order to move those extra few steps. Because we are at a point where this is a 10-year struggle to win full equality for couples and families, or it's a three-generation struggle. And I believe it can be the former, but only if everyone who cares about this issue, like-minded allies who wants to see a country in our vision, gets engaged to the same level so many of you already have to date. Thank you.
That was Kate Kendall of the National Center for Lesbian Rights speaking at an Out and Equal Workplace Summit panel on marriage equality. And you're listening to This Way Out, the International Lesbian and Gay Radio Magazine. Fellow panelist Evan Wolfson of Freedom to Marry continued the analysis and discussed his prescription for success.
Freedom to Marry is the gay and non-gay partnership, my organization, working to win marriage equality nationwide. What that means is our little band, our little organization, works with all the organization, national groups like NCLR, local groups like the groups who are leading the fight in the various states, and non-gay ally groups to support their work and their leadership, which is primary, because no one group can do this alone. We're a movement. To bring these groups together in a movement and to then say, this is what we are all doing together. This is not just a battle here, a fight there, a court case there, a partnership plan here. This is a movement, and we're doing this work together on our varied fronts. And to take all of that and hope to summon more resources and more allies into our combined effort. That's the work that Freedom to Marry does with its partners. As Kate just described, we are living, obviously, in a historic moment of civil rights conversation. The lessons from the point she made about California and Massachusetts are that Massachusetts was not always Massachusetts. California was not always where California is now. What caused that change in 1 year to the next? What caused it was two things. Number one, the lived experience, the reality of families helped and no one hurt that people could see with their own eyes. Not scary right-wing rhetoric, not hypotheticals, but real people like us, in this case the families and couples and kids, making it real, making it personal, taking it and showing it to their neighbors. And the fair-minded people of Massachusetts took a deep breath and took it in. So lesson number one is we really need to communicate that reality, the personal ask, the personal face, the personal voice that helps people to get past the hypotheticals and understand this for real is about real people, how the denial of marriage harms them. And the second thing that made the difference in Massachusetts is that we, our movement, our partners, the organizations in Massachusetts, counterparts of you and probably some of you, did what needed to be done as activists to make this change stick. What they did in Massachusetts was groups that had not worked together very well buried the hatchet, cut the crap, and came together and formed a far more sophisticated, far better resourced, concerted effort to do what needed to be done, to organize, to deliver those voices to the people that needed to hear them, and to enlist more messengers, more diverse voices into the discussion, going after candidates who were not good, standing up for candidates who were good, taking down bad guys, or at least forcing them into primaries, pressing the conversation, enlisting new allies, and that degree of organizing at a scale much higher and with a unity much greater than we had shown before, combined with the most important factor, the lived experience, the reality, the making it personal, the adding the voices, are what turned that tide in Massachusetts. That's a lesson for our work in the rest of the country. The lesson from California is we can't give up. We can't stop pressing. We can't assume that just because people are generally good, they necessarily have connected the dots. We need to make it real. We need to make it personal. We need to organize. We need to reorganize. And we need to press, press, press. And then we can do it. Now, this is, of course, as Kate said, a national civil rights movement. Our work will not be done until we've won in every state. As in every civil rights movement, we will not win symmetrically and linearly. We will not win in all 50 states at once. The classic pattern of civil rights advance in America is patchwork. Some states move toward equality faster, while others resist and even regress. They even get worse before they get better. And that is exactly, yet again, what we are seeing in history as our civil rights movement takes its chapter in this arc of equality. In this patchwork period, we're going to see these states going in different directions, and we will not be done until all 50 states have finished. But at the same time, what we also know is that what happens in any one state can affect what happens in all the others. And the work we do in any state, win or lose, can move this national debate forward to the betterment, ultimately, of all 50 states. So for activists like you who come from diverse communities and diverse organizations and have diverse skills and diverse access and diverse contacts of people to bring into this conversation, your job is to give the fair-minded middle, the reachable but not yet reached people in your state, your community, your company, your constituency, whatever circle you can reach, the two things they need to move to fairness as this civil rights conversation unfolds. And those two things, quite simply, are information and time. The information they need is, again, as we saw from Massachusetts and California, the personal stories, the personal ask, why this matters to you, why this matters to people they know, why this matters to people you love. And you have to get those stories and put them forward in the face, pushing past the discomfort of people who would rather not talk about it. That's your job, to make them talk about it. And you have to make them talk about it again and again and again. The personal, the real, that couples who have made a personal commitment in life, who are doing the hard work of marriage in their own lives, raising kids, caring for one another, worrying about their aging parents, contributing to the company, building the community, paying taxes, these couples who are doing the work of marriage, who have made that personal commitment in their life, deserve an equal legal commitment to match. That's the information. As local and as concrete and as personal and as real as you can make it with your voice, your face, and the stories you bring to bear in front of these people who are wrestling with this question. Information and time. People need the time to absorb this. No civil rights movement, no civil rights change is won or even embraced overnight. We owe it to the fair-minded people of this country and of every community to prompt them to have this information even when they don't know they want it, and to make sure they have enough time to absorb it, which means we have to start now, not the day before the vote, not the month before the vote, not even 6 months before the vote, but now, because they need that time, they deserve that time. They need to hear this enough times over time to get there. And so your job, our job, individually and collectively, is to make sure that we have those conversations and prompt those conversations in every circle, in every community, in every state, as often and as early as we can. Ending the denial of marriage helps families, helps the community, and is the right thing for our country. Thank you.
That was Evan Wolfson of the group Freedom to Marry. Both he and Kate Kendall of the National Center for Lesbian Rights discussed the U.S. struggle for marriage equality at the recent annual Out and Equal Workplace Summit in Denver, Colorado. Thanks for choosing This Way Out, the International Gay and Lesbian Radio Magazine. This week, Sherry Lund, John Beaupre, Rex Walkner, and Graham Underhill contributed program material, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. A special thanks also to Helene Rosenbluth of HMR Duplications. Remember, you can listen online to This Way Out exclusively on Planet Out. There's a link at our website, thiswayout.org. Some This Way Out operating expenses are funded by direct charitable donations from our listeners. Thank you. Log on to thiswayout.org to find out how you can help keep us on the air and choose from some unique This Way Out queer history and culture CDs that you can own as our thanks. That's thiswayout.org. To sign up for our weekly emailed program information messages and or our monthly This Way Out updates, email tworadio@aol.com. You can also write to us at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and all of us at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. We thank you for listening on CKDU, Halifax, Nova Scotia, WHUS, Storrs, Connecticut, KKFI, Kansas City, Missouri, and more than 150 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Everybody, stay tuned.